dun 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 bum 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 dun 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 and then it's like the fussy fellas Verdon viewers viewers bum 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 ba.
Hello and welcome to Fosse Fellas Verdon Viewers, the podcast about the FX musical drama series Fosse Verdon that is airing on FX, an affiliate of Fox, presumably now an affiliate of Disney, the Walt Disney Corporation, in the year of our Lord Bob Iger 2019.
I love the ears that you're wearing right now, too.
Oh, thank you. We are all legally mandated to weld ears onto our heads now. Now that the merger is complete, the singularity is what they call it when Disney buys Fox. We all become robots.
It sounds wonderful. I'm sorry, I interrupted your name, though.
Do you want to take a stab at it? You want to guess it?
I'm going to take a guess that your name is Marty Scanlon.
A great guess. I'm going to guess your name is Jimmy Blackman.
That is a good guess, but it is not correct.
I actually should have. I was being too polite. Yours is also not correct.
Okay, got it.
Should we just try it again?
Or we could skip this bit completely if we really want.
I'd really like to milk this bit for a while longer.
As the person who gave birth to this bit,
It's my baby, and it will suckle it at both of our teats.
Well, my name is Marty Scanlon,
and my name is Jimmy Blackman, and that's why we were both so close. We guessed our own names when we should have guessed each other's names.
Welcome Let's back really to Bit to Bit Explainer. Yeah, this is it's we're like
this is that podcast Song Exploder.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to do.
Deep into our Bit Exploder, you just
Bit Explainer.
A bad bit and make it 30 minutes instead of a minute.
Yeah, it's like really close talking to the mic, and it's like, so at this time, what I thought would be funny is if we sort of changed the idea that the names that we were using were somehow each other's names.
I hate to be too self-reflective or meta, but that's a good bit, doing a podcast called Bit Exploder. Like, that's it's honestly a very good bit. What is this podcast? Is it Bit Exploder? Is this an episode of Bit Exploder?
No, this is an episode of Fosse Fellas Verdon Viewers, which is, of course, a subsidiary of Smash Bros., the podcast about the NBC musical drama series Smash that aired on NBC from 2012 to 2013.
Nicely done.
We, of course, are the Smash Bros. We are watching Smash and becoming better bros. But right now, we're taking a deep dive into the limited run series Fosse Verdon,
which is
a lovely piece of media that I am enjoying watching a lot.
Yeah, it's some content that we're slurping these days, but Smash is still our bae, our number one bestie. We're talking this week about episode 5 of Smash Bros. Of Fosse Verdon. It's entitled "Where Am I Going?" which was sort of the only title it could possibly have, given I believe that was the only song sung in the episode.
Indeed.
This is should we just dive into it, or anything to cover up top? Any Avengers movies or Game of Thrones episodes that really need discussing? How about that Starbucks cup? Am I wrong?
Yeah, that was crazy. Am I right, ladies?
what do we think Daenerys gets in her coffee? A little dragon's milk or something? I've heard of oat milk, but dragon's milk?
Now, what will these freaking millennials think of next? Am I right anyway? Where's the nearest hospital,
just
buddy?
They call the tall a small? Are they called the small a tall? Well, all those words mean big, grande, venti. That means 20. What is going on here?
Go ahead. Anyway, do you have any pictures of activists that I can Photoshop me giving the middle finger to later?
We covered basically everything that Twitter was up and
happened this
about
week.
This
week. I will say that I've been awake for damn near 16 hours at this point. I've had a very long day, so I'm sorry if
Marty's
trying
to break a Guinness record. Nobody's told him that the record's a lot more than 16, but he's shooting for it.
I'm trying to break the record for a person who says damn near at least once a day.
Damn near.
Yeah, that's you can work that in. I mean, it especially helps if you're in like Colorado or something, and somebody's like, "Where's how close am I to the Grand Coulee?" And you say, "Damn
near."
You're near the dam. I don't actually know where the Grand Coulee Dam is, and I said Colorado, and probably wrong, but maybe I'm right. And then that was a good bit. We're back into Bit Exploder.
This episode is great if you love Mad Men or the dinner party episode of The Office.
Yeah, it's a classic bottle episode. It's I think every TV show writer, you know, secretly wants to get to do their Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. And
sure.
A lot of TV shows do it. You know, Mad Men did it kind of a lot. And Fosse Verdon did it this week. I think this episode was not my favorite episode of the show. There was a lot that I enjoyed about it. I liked the Mad Men-iness of it a lot. Yeah. I guess up top, I think that this was the fifth episode of the show, and I know that reviewers of this show were given 5 episodes to watch. Uh-huh. And I think this is an unfortunate, like, last episode to have in somebody's mind about this show going into it. Just because, I just in terms of the way that Gwen Verdon gets painted in it and her relationship to Bob Fosse, this is so far the most, and it feels like they're going to undercut this idea, but it's the most, like, you know what? I forgive him for everything bad he did because he's an artistic genius. Like, the fact that that's sort of where the episode ended up felt a little bit... It just in general, a lot about the dynamics in this episode felt like a little rote, a little standard.
Like a little easy?
A little easy. Just a little bit... I don't know. Just that whole, the whole, like, each has their young, new, paramour with them, and you know, and I don't know, I mean, I thought it was very well acted and very, like, well done. It just felt like, now we do this episode, this is that episode that you're expecting, yeah, that you've seen. But I still enjoyed it a lot. I'm excited to get into some of the, you know, the nitty-gritty of it, but I don't know, what were your big tent thoughts?
I don't know. I guess something I sort of appreciated was seeing the side of Gwen that we haven't seen before, and I sort of purposely haven't read or learned a ton about either of them, which I plan on doing once the show is finished.
Sure.
So I sort of appreciated seeing a more unhinged side that was, like, a little bit more of a dangerous, you know, whether it's just alcohol-fueled or a lot of other things fueled with alcohol, or... I sort of appreciated seeing that side of her that was sort of jealous and bitter, and the mask kind of slipping off a little bit.
Right. But, no, absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely understand where you're coming from with, like, wrapping that episode up with, like, oh, he's just brilliant. If that is how it happened that fast, then, like, they're making a great TV show that's, like, pretty fair. And I think I will say that I think the show has done a pretty good job of being... of not feeling like it's like the fuck me Jesus documentary about Ted Bundy, or right, like, right. You know, like it's not like putting up either of these people on a pedestal, but it's also not like cutting them off at the knees and being like, see how terrible they were.
Right.
So I appreciated some of the dimensionality. I mean, her performance is, like, fully formed and doesn't need any more dimensions, but, like, I appreciated from a writing and acting perspective seeing her a little bit more with the mask slipping.
Yeah, I think my thing with that, I agree with all of that. It was, because I think that, like, she's a more a better person than Bob Fosse or whatever, I don't want her idolized or put on a pedestal either, you know. That's
right.
That does a disservice to it if she's just made to be this, like, perfect person who's a victim of his things. You do want to have that dimensionality, like you said, and want to have the shades of gray of her character. I guess my thing, and it wouldn't be, I understand it wouldn't really be in this episode given the everybody trapped in the house element of it, but I want to get dimension. Sorry, that was an email coming in on my computer. Let me just mute that.
I want to get the other sides of her in the same way we get the other sides of Bob by having scenes of him in his life without her. I feel like we
absolutely get
so few scenes of her in her life without him. And I get that, like, that Jake Lacey's character, that part of what's funny about the character and what's true feeling about the character is that he is just sort of just a guy, that we're not going to, like, see some really riveting scene between him right. and her at home. But maybe we are. I mean, you know, I'm sure that that relationship did have its own dramas to it. And I'm sure that that lots of parts of her life that were separate from Bob had interesting drama to it. And she does kind of increasingly seem to just pop up in the show to clash with Bob, whereas Bob yeah. gets to also go and do his other thing. So that, yeah, that's a little bit frustrating to me.
Yeah, I get that. That definitely makes sense.
But to get into more of this episode, if anybody's listening who has not seen the episode, I mean, the briefest of recaps is it's a few months after Bob's gotten out of the psychiatric hospital, and
it's about 3 months.
Then I was going to say, I'm not sure how long it's been, but a bit of time since Neil Simon's wife, Joan, has died as well. Yeah. And
I think title card said 3 months.
Oh, did it say that? Okay. Yeah. So Bob has invited Gwen, Patty Chayefsky, Neil Simon, and Gwen's... What do we know Gwen's... I mean, I'm sure we do. Oh,
Ron?
Rod. Ronnie. Or Robbie?
I think it was Ron.
Was it Ron? Okay.
I just made that up, though. Let me look it up.
No, that sounds right. Has invited them all to this beach house, and then Nicole, the daughter, as well. And it's just sort of like a classic, over the course of a weekend, people are drinking and start fighting. You know, hidden feelings come out. Things boil to a point. But I will say, I thought this episode was a really great episode for both Norbert Leo Butz as Patty Chayefsky and someone who we've really barely seen so far, but Nate Cordry as Neil Simon. I think they both give really nice performances.
Yeah, I really loved what is his name? Nate Cordry?
Nate Cordry, Rob Cordry's brother.
Oh, he does look like him.
And he was also on Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
He was terrific.
He was really, really terrific. He just gives a very nice performance that feels... I haven't seen a lot of interviews with Neil Simon, but knowing Neil Simon's work well and knowing vaguely what he looks like, it feels like it's a very accurate presentation of what Neil Simon was probably like, and it's just a very, like, you know, he doesn't have that much to do in this episode except just kind of be sad but also, like, trying to move on and trying to, and he really comes across as, like, a genuinely sort of nice, sweet, funny guy who's just like trying to get back on his feet, and it I don't know, it's just like a very affecting performance for me.
Yeah, I also just, like, when I think of, I don't guess I haven't, like, seen interviews or anything, but, like, when I think of Neil Simon's work, I assume that it's going to be, like, I assume that they'll play him somehow, like, very nebbish or very, just because, like, in my mind.
You imagine it's going to almost be played like a Woody Allen or something.
Yeah, like, and, like, myself as, like, a Jewish man who would, like, if someone was, like, playing Neil Simon in a scene, I'd be like, sure, Neil Simon's probably like, hey, how are you? You know, like, in, like, top of my intelligence improv bullshit scene. Right. But, like, seeing just, like, a very nuanced, lovely portrayal of this, you know, beloved playwright was very cool. I really liked him a lot.
Yeah, you know, a lot of shows like this that touch on very famous people sort of, or not necessarily shows, but anything, movies, it sort of will often play those kind of smaller roles for laughs or for you know, and can you believe it? Here's so-and-so, and they come in. And I genuinely very much respect that this show, like, honors those kind of roles and really lets them all be characters and sort of be characters beyond their incredibly famous names. I mean, Neil Simon is, you know, he has a theater named after him on Broadway. He died like a year ago, and he's, like, still very much, I think, in the public consciousness, and to be able to let this character just breathe and be a character is pretty cool to me.
Yeah, I agree. What's the actress's name who plays Anne Rankin?
Margaret Qualley.
Yes, I really like her a lot too.
I like her a lot. I like her a lot too. I had a little bit more trouble with her in this episode. I don't the hearing her speak more. I found did you find the accent to be feel like put on a little bit to be
I think
a little
sounds,
unnatural?
I think or is, it sounds does it so sound, much like her okay. that it's like
that it's just yeah.
I could be like misremembering from like all that jazz and also just like from like hearing interviews and things, but like it sounds so much like her that I'm like she's doing amazing accent.
Okay if that's actually how she sounded, then I 100% allow it. It just felt it felt a little bit
it definitely feels accent-y, but like that's kind of what she sounds like.
And then like truly what can you do. So this episode so another interesting I guess avenue to go down in this episode, other than the performances, is it made me. I think this is something you sort of said last week about that very All That Jazzy episode, but made even more clear this week is that they really are sort of building to a boiling point, and that boiling point is the story at the center of All That Jazz, which is interesting. Like, just given that we have only three episodes left, and they've like very clearly at the end of this episode set up, he's going to be
right, Chicago
working on Chicago at the same time as editing Lenny, which is essentially the story that's told in All That Jazz, right? And then leading to his heart attack. Right. I mean, isn't that what he's doing in that movie? He's editing his movie about Lenny Bruce.
Is that what he's doing in All That Jazz?
And he's in rehearsals for a play. For a musical. Yeah.
For Chicago. Interesting.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that, like, that's the one, the little period of his life that's about. So it's just, I mean, it's working. It's all very exciting. It is just funny that they're willing to, like, very much put their stake in that very tread on ground. But I don't really have a problem with it. It's just an observation.
So it's like, then are we going to watch a docu-series? I mean, are we going to watch prestige limited run series explore in a fictitious way a person making a fake movie about themselves as a fake character in another, like, are we, how
right.
far
yeah,
down
are we? Well, that's the question. I mean, that's the real question. Does it get to the, like, late season Seinfeld, like, meta thing? Or does it just end by doing its own version of the movie, which is just as weird. Like, if it ends with essentially, like, him having, like, if it ends with him going through all the stress of Lenny in Chicago and then having a, like, mental breakdown or whatever at the end of it, then, you know, I mean, it's just then that's just them doing All That Jazz. But if they do it really well, like, I'm kind of fine with that being it. Though I think my preference would be the insanity of a prestige TV show making a
totally
episode about the making of a self-reflective movie about a blah blah blah.
I thought that this was Sam Rockwell's best episode.
I agree 100%. I have really come around to his performance couple episodes, and I think and really in this one, I it would be interesting if I go back and watch the first episode if my feelings would change about it. I think they might and might not, but he's doing some great work.
This episode also, I think,
relaxed.
Because the character is relaxed, he's relaxed. And I just found him so interesting and likable and relaxed that I just felt taken care of in a way that when I watch Michelle Williams in previous episodes that I've been like, that's Gwen Verdon. I felt that way about him in the episode yesterday of like, that's Bob Fosse.
And it's sort of interesting that this episode by the end of it calls out the way that his relaxed presentation of himself is a put on, like, that you know, this whole idea of him like calling together this weekend and renting a nice house and having all this stuff, that he's doing this to convince the world that he's not broken. And it's interesting that performance also like hooked me and you and made us feel like, God, he really is so likable in this character. Right. And that's exactly what he's doing. But yeah, he's making some like very, I mean, Sam Rockwell is always an interesting actor. He's always brings something interesting, but I think because of some of the Bob Fosse-ness of it in the earlier episodes and just the bigness of it, I missed
some of it. It can feel a little caricature-y.
Yeah, but I missed some of the just, like, uniquely human things he's doing, some of which I'm sure is based on his observation of, like, interviews with Fosse and all that, but the way, it's not a stutter that he gives the character, but a way that he will quietly say, maybe, tell me if you've noticed this, he'll, like, quietly say a version of the line and then repeat himself louder.
Yeah, like that he's
gaining
like,
well, confidence in his own thought.
It's like, what do you mean I can't be there? Like that kind of thing. Like,
or yeah, but it'll even be like, that's almost like a too subtle, because that's almost like just a stutter where it's like a what? It's like he'll be like, what do you mean I can't be there? What do you mean I can't be there? Like he'll almost say the whole line and then repeat it. In this way that makes you, I don't know, at least my read on it is like, it makes me question how like secure in himself the character is, because it feels like he's always like focus testing things before he says them out loud, kind of.
Right.
But it's just, I don't know, it's just one of those things that's like, I'm sure that's not in the script that the character does this, and I think a lot of actors like wouldn't have the bravado to give the character that kind of line. So in that way, I really like that an actor like Sam Rockwell is in this role, because he has the confidence to kind of fuck around and make the character very, very unique in a way that a lot of actors would not.
Sure. And then you have Michelle Williams,
who's just great. This episode, she's just great as always.
I liked her singing. The singing, Allie and I both thought, were like, well, it's a little auto-tuned. It'd be cool if it maybe wasn't auto-tuned, but maybe that didn't. Maybe we're also just being super picky.
I that didn't bump me. I didn't notice that, but I'm sure you are right.
We could be totally wrong, honestly. But I liked that moment.
I think you guys are both people who are probably attuned to that kind of thing more than I am. So yeah, I liked. And I like that this episode was a much less, like, after last week's very musical, very
presentational,
very fantasy presentational sort of episode. It was nice. It was a nice flex to like sort of flip it completely and do the inverse of that kind of episode.
Yeah,
and
do like a Sally Draper dream ballet.
Okay, well, so Sally Draper. Speaking of, this episode tested me just a little bit on the Nicole Fosse being a producer of it. Partially because child actors are just like generally not the most compelling people to watch, so putting them too much at the center of the story. But it felt a little bit like it was all like, you know, here was my memory of this weekend where some shit went down, and it's great, again, to draw from the source memory of that, but it didn't feel very necessary to make the Sally Draper-ish kid trying cigarettes for the first time
part. Drinking beer and...
Yeah, I get it. Obviously, I get it. It's like the adults are fighting, and little do they notice what the kids are doing. Right. But it just felt... To me, it felt too transparently just like... putting a hat on the fact that the source of a lot of this is the kid's memory. But I don't know. What did you think about that?
I don't think that bothered me so much, but I think it also just honestly brought up feelings of, wow, I really miss Mad Men. So maybe I just felt sort of like, well, this is kind of like Mad Men, so I kind of just buy it. But I definitely understand that.
Well, I also think that Kiernan Shipka was the, like, uniquely talented child actor.
She was amazing.
And so just, like, seeing somebody who's just not really that compelling doing the same sort of thing, I was more like, oh, I miss Mad Men, and this just isn't quite doing it for me. But
yeah,
the show is, like, of all, you know, there were all those shows that came out after Mad Men that were surface level, very Mad Men-y, you know, your Pan Ams and your Playboy Club. I don't know. There were one or two others right around then that were all the very 60s thing. And then that sort of died out. And none of them, from the little I saw, really understood the, like, aesthetic slowness, the intentional slowness, and, like, the sort of seedy or grimy is the wrong word, but the, like, sort of dirty old sofa-ness of Mad Men.
Yes.
They only understood the glamorous glitz of Mad Men, which is really not what the heart of Mad Men was.
Right.
It was much, like, more about the shag carpets and everything. Like,
and not like the carousel presentation.
Yeah, exactly. And this show, years now after Mad Men, really does often sort of hit that Mad Men thing in a way that in a way that works.
Yeah, I totally agree. But it did make me nostalgic for it, and it also made me want to watch Michael Scott throwing a Dundee at a 10-inch plasma screen TV.
Yeah, I had not thought of that dinner party comparison, but absolutely, it's that. And you know, I like a bottle episode. I
do too.
Putting your characters together in an interesting place. I guess it's interesting for this show because it moves through time so rapidly normally.
Yes.
Like, last week covered like a year or something like that, maybe 6 months of their lives. So it's not that I felt like whiplash from suddenly stopping and having it all take place over a weekend. I thought that worked very well. But it is it's kind of like sad to think, oh, next week we probably pick back and rapidly go through things again, just because the pace of the show is not generally one where it's like, oh, each week I'm coming back and seeing the direct repercussions of what happened the previous week.
Yeah, they're almost their own little mini arcs within.
Yeah, which is fine, and it makes sense for an 8-episode series, but I guess this episode did give a little taste of like, of what the 6-season series version of Fosse Verdon would be. And I don't know that it could actually support 6 seasons, and I know Sam Rockwell and Michelle Williams wouldn't sign up for 6 seasons, but it did kind of give you a little glimpse into that alternate universe where we just watch a very long ongoing show about these people's lives.
Yeah, it kept cutting to breaks, and I was like, that's the end of the episode.
Yeah.
And that was at 22 minutes, and then... Right. It cut again, and I was like, that's the end. And it was at 42 minutes.
Right.
And I was like, wow, I've really been trained by television to, like, just look for... I mean, it's just good. It's, you know, good TV, but it's just...
Yeah,
like,
I think that's a sign of... I think that's a sign of a kind of good episode that, like, that you're not... that you're not, like, aware of where you are in the arc. That you can't
totally
see the structure of it. That you get just sort of immersed in it and just feel like you're flowing along with, like, you obviously want things to have those arcs, otherwise you see it and it just, you can't really put your finger on what's wrong with it, but it doesn't work. But you don't want to see the arcs too clearly. And I think, like, network TV in particular, you're like seeing the arcs so clearly and those act outs and everything. And this had a nice languid quality to it.
Yeah.
What else? Any other thoughts on this? Thoughts on, you know, the next three, that sort of thing?
No, I mean, I'm interested to see how much time... It's just what we're talking about. I'm interested to see how much time is spent on the oncoming conflict here. You know, if it's the kind of thing that we're going to jump pretty far ahead till it's in the middle of the process, or if we're going to pick right up where we left off. Here, I'll be very curious to see.
So there's three episodes. Here's my guess. My guess is that next week is all about Chicago and Lenny interacting, him spiraling, you know, like great success, great frustration.
Great success from Bob Fosse's favorite movie, Borat.
And then we see sort of the upward trajectory of Gwen Verdon during that time, like Chicago being a huge hit. And I guess Chicago was not a huge hit in its initial run, right? It was the revival that really cemented.
And was she recast?
Chicago.
Or did she stay in it for a while?
She definitely was in the, like,
She was not recast original. Before. Yeah. Before, but I think it maybe ran for like 2 years originally, and then came back like 10 years later, and has still been running, or maybe 20 years later. But anyway, I think that will be next week. I think the week after is like him going through like big breakdown, and then make or him going through breakdown is next week, and then I think the following week is the making of All That Jazz. All about that, and then the finale is like
rest him floating towards an angel.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, just sort of the headed towards death. I mean, he makes a whole other movie after All That Jazz. It's not like right. Death comes that quickly afterwards. But the sort of the wrap up episode of their lives. That would be my guess, but I don't know. That does feel like a sort of weak way to end it. So maybe I'm wrong, but
Bob Fosse flew back to his home planet.
That's right, where everybody's hat was askew and everybody had knees jutted out and
no filter in their shoulders. Cigarette.
Yeah. I like this episode. I don't mean to make it sound like I didn't like this episode.
No, I understand where you're coming from, though, as far as the criticism goes. I think I probably liked it more than you did, but I definitely understand what you're bringing to the table as points of, not contention even, but just points of things that weren't your fave.
I think what it honestly comes down to more than anything is that I like this show a lot, and I feel protective over it, and I can see... I can see the soft spots in this episode where others might say, like, this show is glorifying things, or this show is, like, doing sort of rote storytelling, or this show is lifting its tone from Mad Men or whatever. And I want to, like, get in front of those things and be like, no, yes, it is doing that. But, you know, so I'm like, I don't want to be, like, part of me is like, is the loving mother of this show who's just like, my baby can do no wrong, but I want to be like the parent who sees the flaws in the child but still encourages it to blossom and grow into something.
You're like
even better.
You're feeding this show broccoli and carrots, and then you're also feeding this show fried chicken wings.
That's right. I'm giving it everything. I'm giving it a 5 pickles, even though it'll make its tummy hurt. That's why we call her Pickle. That's why you call her Pickle, not because it rhymes with Nicole. I assume it was because it rhymed with Nicole. Nicole Pickle. Yeah. I mean, it's a slant rhyme, but...
Right, but no, it's on paper, it rhymes.
Yeah.
My nickname would be Chorizo Taco. Because, motherfucker, I love chorizo tacos.
Oh, what would mine be? I like sandwich. Pulled pork sandwich.
This is my boy Sandwich. He's going to be taking care of you today, okay? If you need anything at all, freaking anything. Pulled pork is...
Are you a maitre d' at a restaurant there in that scenario?
Yeah, it's like a very underground mob restaurant, though.
Yeah, yeah. Artie Bucco's there.
Yes. Tony the Lip is there.
Yeah. Well, great. I think we've covered it. Yeah, I like Jake Lacey in this episode. Now that I know it was him,
yeah, me too.
I think he gives, gives a great version of that guy who you've seen in a million things, but is the new boyfriend who just wants everybody to get along and
Also a good foil. We didn't talk about like Bob Fosse's essentially being. I guess if not sexually assaulted, coerced, something, really talk about him as acting as a foil to that. Just like that really nice moment of like, I was just like a normal guy with a normal sweetheart.
Going steady with my college girlfriend.
And then him being like, I was basically accosted by these two older women and forced into having sex.
Right.
And it's like, whoa, well, there's... It's just it was good storytelling. I liked that a lot.
Yeah. What that would be so weird to be that guy. Not related to the sex thing really, but just to like be spending a weekend with Neil Simon, Patty Chayefsky, and Bob Fosse. I mean, I guess already your girlfriend's Gwen Verdon, so it's like you're a little bit used to that life, but like
right.
How strange would that be?
Yeah, that'd be wild.
Well, let's see. Let's wrap this thing up. Let's see what happens. Hoping for the best for Bobby and Gwenny, and hoping the Chicago thing is a hit. I'm hoping.
I think it's going to be a hit.
Pop shit, Lipschitz, and all the rest.
Pop squish, Cicero, Lipschitz, and yeah. And the rest.
Yeah. Rate, review, subscribe, and all that.
Smash that like button, ring that gosh damn bell.
Ring that bell. Send us videos of you ringing the bell. Tweet videos to Smash Bros Pod. Show us your best bell ringing out there. We want to see us. Hashtag ring those bells. Hit it, Marty.
I want to see videos. I want to see videos of you smashing your phone with a hammer, smashing that like button.
Yes.
That's Smash Bros, Smash Bros. Smash those Smash Bros.
Smash those Smash Bros. Send us your best videos phones. Of you sending phones. iPhone 7 and up only, please. Yes. Of you smashing your iPhones. Until next week, my name is Jimmy Blackman.
And I am Marty Scanlon. And we will
view you later,
fellas.
All right.
To find more Smash Bros, go to smashbros.fun. That's SMASHBROS.FUN.
Or find us on iTunes, where you can rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast.
Smash Bros is produced in New York City by me, Marty Scanlon, and hosted by me and Jimmy Blackman.
I'm on Twitter at Jimmy Blackman, and Marty is at MC Scan.
If you know Brian Darcy James and think he would be down to do this podcast and maybe sing on it for us,
what the hell are you doing? Tell him to email us at podcastsmashbros@gmail.com. We'll see you next week on The Great White Way.
And now, Brian Darcy James.